Sometimes we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Happy Friday and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Sports reporters across East Africa say life has become hard after sports events were canceled in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. With no events to cover and limited means of transportation, some sports reporters are not working, while others are looking for alternative means to earn a living. Magume Davis Rakawinj filed this story from Kampala, Uganda.
Freelance sports journalist Ronald Kisambo says he could not find stories to file when sports activities were suspended in Uganda. Yet he had to take care of his family of six. He knew he had to devise means. Kisambo resorted to his earlier skill of making liquid soap. Using his savings of 500,000 Uganda shillings, or about $150, Kisambo bought material to make liquid soap.
Time came in when everything was on a standstill, so I had to put hands on. Now I do the soap. And I get contracts from, basically I get contracts from MPs, because these are the people I've been with. I get contracts from the MPs, I make jerrycans, like 50 jerrycans, 100 jerrycans for them. They take to their constituencies. This is how I've been earning a living in this period of the COVID. But most of my friends, my fellow journalists, my fellow sports journalists are crying.
Kisambo now earns 100,000 Uganda shillings of profit daily, or some $25. Kenyan journalist Julius Juma also says life has become difficult for sports reporters in Kenya.
Every match day, I'll be cruising to various stadia across the country to cover football matches. But that is not happening any longer. For now, what matters, of course, is the health, the safety of the sportsmen who make the game interesting, and, of course, everyone around the globe. We just pray that things get better.
Juma says most journalists in his country are not working or earn less than 30% of what they used to earn.
Of course, most of us have been subjected to pay cuts and mandatory leaves. Income has just drastically dropped given the fact that a number of sporting events were postponed or rather cancelled. What hit me hard personally was the cancellation of the Kenya Magical Open Golf Tournament.
Also, the Kenyan Premier League was contentiously ended, with leaders at the time, Gor Mahia, being declared champions with more games to play. Juma says he now relies on Skype and social media for interviews to file stories. Richard Bishumba is the sports editor for Rwanda's English daily, The New Times. Bishumba says he used to publish more than 65% of stories from freelance reporters, most of who are now unable to work. Bishumba says despite the suspension of sports events, the public must remain entertained. He also has some advice for sports reporters.
One, financially speaking, is to have more than one source of income, because anytime anything can happen, like this pandemic. But on the part of the profession, one is to be versatile, to be able to report more than just sports. So that if the industry is affected, maybe you can report on other issues, other sectors. The three is to move from covering events to covering human interest stories, features and profiles.
Sports reporters say they won't quit the profession. They hope the coronavirus pandemic will come to an end and they'll be able to do a job they love. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Magume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Hello everyone, I am Principal Jichimera Shadil Musa, Uganda Bombers captain. I'm going to be representing Uganda, my country, in the forthcoming Olympics, Japan, Tokyo. Listen to Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
We're joined on the show once again by Dan Friedel, frequent Sunny Side of Sports contributor, occasional program host. Sporty greetings, Dan.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. It's nice to get a chance to talk with you. I hope you're doing well, all things considered.
Dan, on Friday's show, we heard from our friend Magume Davis Rakawinj, and he talked about how African reporters are coping with this sports lockdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic. On a personal note, Dan, how have you been coping with these crazy coronavirus times?
Well, Sonny, it's certainly been an adjustment. It's been an adjustment in my personal life and my work life. I was actually supposed to work for the Detroit Red Wings of the National Hockey League in mid-March when some of the professional sports events started getting shut down, and the Major League Baseball season was set to start in late March, and the first baseball game that I was supposed to work in the regular season was in early April, where the defending Major League Baseball champions, Washington Nationals, were supposed to have their home opener, and all of the baseball games have been canceled, obviously. Up to this point, I probably would have worked at 15 or 16 baseball games. And one of the activities that you and I have talked about in the last year or so is that I got interested in rowing on the river here in Washington, D.C. with a local rowing club in the late summer of 2019, and really enjoyed that and was looking forward to the season starting. And of course, that all has been shut down, so I haven't been able to participate in one of my newfound sporty activities. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see if we get to go back on the water and whether we see some of these professional sporting events back on our television screens sometime soon.
Well, Dan, I know many sports fans are hoping some activity will resume soon. There has been sort of a big appetizer for basketball fans, The Last Dance. It's a 10-part documentary series basically spotlighting the heyday of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. I think the season that it really focuses on is 1997-1998, when the Bulls did win the NBA championship. They beat the Utah Jazz in the finals 4-2. But much of the series focuses on Michael Jordan. Has it changed your opinion at all of Jordan and his status as probably the greatest basketball player of all time?
Sonny, I think that seeing Michael Jordan at the height of his powers, you know, he came onto the American landscape as a university player in North Carolina, his home state, in the early 1980s, and was drafted by the Chicago Bulls, who were a really bad team when he was young, and lifted them up, and the team went through a couple of different coaches. It's really interesting to see the video of Michael Jordan when he was at the height of his powers in the late 80s all the way through the late 1990s, and think about how he would fit in with today's NBA. And I feel like he would be extremely competitive now. You know, one of the things that I remembered is that in the late 1980s, even though the three-point shot was a part of the NBA landscape, you know, players like Steve Kerr, who is the current Golden State Warriors head coach, he was known as a sharpshooter. He was like the Steph Curry of his day. He came off the bench, and they would feed him the ball and try to get him to make a few of these long-range shots. And he would take maybe only 4 or 5 three-pointers a game, and he was one of the best outside shooters of that era. You know, now you have players like Steph Curry shooting 20 times from long range, and one of the most outstanding games that Michael Jordan played early in his career was a playoff loss to the Boston Celtics when the Celtics were one of the top teams in the NBA, competing with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Philadelphia 76ers for NBA superiority. He scored 63 points in that game. So, Sonny, the amazing thing about that game, 63 points, no three-pointers. Michael Jordan was such an outstanding shot maker, but he did it all inside, in the traffic, driving to the lane and making like the most inefficient shots that people consider these days are these shots that are 15 to 18 feet away from the basket. And that was his bread and butter when it was early in his career. He was just such an interesting, unique player. And then the fact that as his career progressed, he continued getting better. It's really remarkable.
Dan, you mentioned that game against the Celtics, that 63-point scoring outburst. And it reminded me, Larry Bird described Jordan as a rookie, that he was the best basketball player he had ever seen. Pretty high praise from Larry Bird, himself a Hall of Fame player. But I think if we look at the record books, Dan, Jordan played in six NBA finals. He won six NBA championships. And in each of those finals, he was named the most valuable player of the series. So just incredible in terms of rising to the occasion. Jordan always seemed to be at his best when the stakes were the highest.
You know, Sonny, one of the games that I remember so vividly, it was May 7th, 1989, that Michael Jordan defeated my hometown Cleveland Cavaliers with a last-second shot in Game 5 of the first round of the playoffs. I was caught off guard because I was celebrating, thinking the Cavs were going to win and advance to the next round of the playoffs. And with the fraction of a second left in the game, Michael Jordan made the game-winning shot and dagger through my teenage heart at that point. But there's no doubt about it that, you know, if the game was on the line and you needed to win, you put the ball in the hands of Michael Jordan. He even did that in a college championship game when he was a 19-year-old. He had that ability to focus and make the shot as if he was playing in his North Carolina backyard with his father. It was really pretty amazing player. And it's so great to relive these games that were part of my formative NBA fandom watching this documentary.
Well, Dan, I know the documentary has a few more episodes to go, but what are some of the takeaways about Jordan, maybe that either surprised you or you learned some new things about MJ personality-wise?
You know, I think that there's one thing about him, and that was that he's, you know, he wasn't perfect, right? He was, you could consider that maybe he was perfect on the basketball court, right? In his generation, for 20 years, he was the best player in the NBA. Some people might argue that Wilt Chamberlain was a transcendent player. That was the conversation then, and now here we are, we're talking about LeBron James. Maybe LeBron James is the greatest player ever. There's no doubt that he was kind of like the perfect basketball specimen. But it's interesting to learn a little bit more about him now that I'm an adult, right? When I was 13 or 14 years, I wasn't able to really put this into perspective. But now that I'm in my 40s, I can say, yeah, you know, Michael Jordan wasn't perfect, right? He had an amazing platform to maybe engender some change in the world by potentially taking some political stances, and he always declined that. He did have seemingly a gambling problem. He wound up having to spend a lot of money to cover gambling debt. So, you know, he wasn't a perfect man off the floor, and that's something I didn't really recognize as a teenager. It actually makes him a little bit more human, right? Because in 1987 to 1997, you know, he was like a god. But to look back, 30 years have gone by, to see how he evolved and get a little bit of a sense of what it was like in his personal life during those years is really interesting to me. And I actually have kind of enjoyed learning about Michael Jordan's flaws over the last few weeks of this documentary being on TV.
Thanks, Dan. That's Dan Friedell. And we'll hear more insights from Dan next week about Michael Jordan and The Last Dance, a 10-part documentary series about Jordan and the Chicago Bulls.
Hi, my name is Honor Sam Mamedur, retired, the president of FIBA Africa Zone 3. I want to give a shout out to the sunny side of sports.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Sporty greetings. This is Reverend Samuel Ikpeya, National Chairman, Nigeria Football Supporters Club. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Thanks.
Thank you, Reverend Samuel. In African athletics, the South Sudan national team remains based in Maibashi, Japan, despite the postponement of the 2020 Olympics to 2021. Japan Running News reports the South Sudanese athletes will stay in Maibashi until at least July to make the most of the training facilities. South Africa's 400-meter Olympic champion Wade van Niekerk is trying to stay calm and positive amid the Olympic Games postponement. Forbes Africa quotes van Niekerk saying, "What I have learned is to try and find that peace, that positivity and calm in this storm. It's a mentality shift that I had to meditate on, that I had to build a positive foundation, that I reap every strength and positivity invested in me. Now I am making sure my physical and mental strength can complement one another." A positive message for sure from Wade van Niekerk, South Africa's 400-meter Olympic champion. Meanwhile, a British Paralympic table tennis player is also sending a positive message, providing medical help to his country during the coronavirus pandemic. Joining us now with more details is VOA's Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. British table tennis player Kim Daybell had planned to take leave from his job as a junior doctor to focus full-time on his trip to Tokyo. But news of the Olympic postponement upended his quest to bring home gold. Now the two-time Paralympian is standing on the front lines in the fight against the coronavirus. Daybell spoke to Reuters News from Whittington Hospital in North London and said going from Olympic athlete to full-time doctor was not an easy transition.
Bit of a shock for me because I was obviously working part-time before. I was working 3-4 days a week. And now it's, working kind of the standard week on top with the on-calls on top. So that's been quite a tough transition. But, everyone's got their head down and managed it. And I think a lot of doctors have been off sick, a lot of nurses have been off sick. So I think managing that's been really difficult.
The UK currently has the highest coronavirus death toll of any country in Europe. Daybell says after a few difficult months when the virus reached its peak, there's a feeling of decline in his COVID-19 ward. But he says his Paralympics training will have to wait until the fight is over.
But I mean, I live in London and you actually need more space than you think to set up a table and have the space to play, which I don't unfortunately have in our small flat in North London. So I've not been able to train at all. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think any of the British athletes, as far as I'm aware, have been able to practice. Because obviously it would mean breaking isolation rules to bring coaches in. I've not picked up a bat now for nearly 5 weeks, I think, which is really weird, really, really weird. I've been playing since I was 9, sort of 10 years old. I've been playing every week. So it's a really strange thing. Getting back into it will be tough, but you never really sort of forget that muscle memory, so hopefully it won't be too painful experience.
Daybell was born with a condition called Poland syndrome, which has caused the muscles on one side of his body to underdevelop. But that hasn't stopped him from competing on the world stage. He played in front of his home crowd at the London Paralympic Games in 2012 and represented Great Britain once again at the Rio Games in 2016. The following year, he won a team silver in the European Championships. And Daybell says the longtime camaraderie is what he misses most in the current crisis.
It's been really difficult, especially being away from the squad. I mean, I've got lots of friends within that team. We've been playing together for a long, long time, and I think we were kind of all just coming together to get ready for, yeah, get ready for Tokyo, like one big family, really. And then that was kind of just stripped away. But on top of the games not being happening, we're also not seeing each other and we're not practicing, which is so strange considering I've trained with them through two Olympics now, London and Rio. So they are like a second family. So that's been tough. Not being able to see them, not being able to train together has been difficult.
And while his dream of competing in his third Paralympics has been put on hold, Daybell says a bright spot with the postponement is that eager spectators will be ready to celebrate once the games resume.
I don't think that it'd be an amazing time for a game. I think the world will be crying out for something positive and something to bring everyone together again and celebrate sport and celebrate kind of, yeah, all being together and having got over something that's obviously been so worldwide and so far-reaching.
The Paralympic Games have been rescheduled to take place from August 24th to September 5th, 2021. International Paralympic Committee President Andrew Parsons is quoted as saying, "When the Games do take place in Tokyo next year, there will be an extra special display of humanity uniting as one, a global celebration of human resilience, and a sensational showcase of sport." And Sonny, that does it for me today and for the week. I'll hand it back over to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. And you have a good weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion. And you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Earlier in the show, I chatted with Dan Friedel about Michael Jordan and the new 10-part basketball documentary, The Last Dance. Jordan Geller is a shoe collector and the founder of the sneaker museum, Shoezeum. Geller says he was so excited by the documentary that he's decided to auction off his autographed pair of 1985 Air Jordan Nike sneakers worn by Michael Jordan. The white, black, and red sneakers with red laces were signed by MJ, and they could fetch up to $150,000 in the online auction, which goes through May 17th. And that wraps up the May 8th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.